There's this new uprising that I'm really excited about, the DIY movement, the do-it-yourself movement. And the do-it-yourself movement from the outside looks like women who are reclaiming craft and reclaiming an economic adventure. These women, for the most part, and I'm speaking very generally here, are doing what's considered women's work, old school craft work, knitting, sewing, crocheting, embroidering, and creating objects that are one of a kind, but that yet are also an economic avenue for them. So it's a little bit of both. You have it on the real one-to-one person level, and then you have it on this major sort of manufacturing production type level. So it really does cut across all levels.
I would imagine, too, there's an aspect of the do-it-yourself movement where you have people who don't necessarily need that economic avenue, but who are reclaiming this work for a mere pastime. And it would be interesting to study what that means.
In creative expression. I mean, when you think about, have you ever heard of hair work?
No, what's that?
Hair work, to me, as an African-American person, the thought of somebody taking my hair and making it into an object of art freaks me out. I can't wrap my brain around it from my perspective. However, women in the 1800s, 17 and 1800s, would take hair from a loved one and create brooches. They'd create wall hangings. They'd create objects that weren't designed for a monetary gain, but were designed as to hold memory, keepsakes, about this person who may be still alive or maybe, you know, shortly gone. And it was passed throughout generations. One of my professors, Ann Smart Martin, has a brooch that I think is her great, great, great aunt's hair. And you look at it and automatically, and perhaps it is an evocative object, you start to create these narratives. Whose hair was this? Who would want to do this intricate work with hair? How do you keep this thing? How do you preserve it over all these generations? Why would you preserve it over all these generations? What is the benefit of having the hair of a great, great aunt in a brooch? Are you really going to wear that? Where does that come from? Why?
That's the question I'm asking, is why?
We don't know why. Different objects have different meaning to different people. Somebody could ask you, why do you have those fiddly, kooky things on your desk? Why do you carry the backpack that you have? I have a set of baked glass mugs that I use exclusively, to the point where I've gotten rid of all my other ones, because now that I have the baked glass ones, the other ones mean nothing to me. So back to the thrift store they go. Why do we clutch onto the things we have? Why do you have to have a new iPad every time a new iPad comes out when the one you had was fine? Why do you have to have the new phone that takes pictures and movies and can rewrite the Magna Carta when phones were originally designed just to call people? Why?
Well, you mentioned your professor, Ann Smart Martin, and I know you're studying material culture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I want to know, why has Wisconsin become one of the cornerstones of material culture studies?
Because we do it here, and we do it well here. One of the things that I think has been the anchor for it is the Chipstone Foundation, and that's in Fox Point, just outside of Milwaukee. And the Chipstone Foundation is this mansion that I got to spend a week in, and whenever I talk about it, I use this voice because it was très chic. It was fabulous, darling. This summer, I spent a week in this mansion on the lakefront. It was awesome. Studying objects, and not only studying objects, like I held a chamber pot from the 17th century. I looked at a Philadelphia chair and I did not know these things existed. This chair was this beautiful wooden, I'm going to give you the visual of it. Imagine like your grandmother's chairs in her house, that beautiful wooden chair with the back that's sort of rectangular, and in its center there's this woven pattern and there's this negative space that goes around it. There may be a shell on it. There may be some other finely turned legs. But I looked at this chair. It has a nice brocade square bottom that you can move. And the professor said, okay, what do you think this chair is for? And looking at the chair, the rail of the chair, where the seat sort of connects to the legs of the chair, that rail, that piece of wood there, it was deeper than any chair I'd ever seen. And I thought, that's weird. Maybe it's a secret chair. Maybe it's used to hold something that's secret. And he said, yes, it does. It was basically a potty chair for adults. So think about the time that it was made. There was no designated room for a bathroom. So what do the wealthy do? Okay, just put it in your perspective. It's one step up from an outhouse. An outhouse is two steps up from just going outside. But compared to what we do now, having a wooden chair with a brocade top that you lift and there's a chamber pot in there and that's what you use to relieve yourself, in our mind, is just disgusting. But at the period that chair was made, it was a brilliant idea.
Ew, is all so, I have to say.
Exactly. So you walk in this fabulous mansion and it's just, there's maps, there's Victorian maps, and there's this beautiful furniture, and there's all these things, and there's all this pottery, and the Chipstone really has a lot of pottery, ceramics. And it's just, you start to create these images. The thing that drew my attention the most in this house was this little ceramic thing, and it was a bear holding a dog. I was like, what is up with that? Not only is it kind of, it looked very kitschy. It looked very funny. It looked like something a kid would make in grammar school. But, you know, a kid who had access to a kiln and some very fine, like, ceramic ware. And from that piece of pottery and just asking the question, what is that? I learned that at one point in our history, bears were used as entertainment. So what you would do is that you take these bears and you'd angry them all up and then you'd throw a dog in with the bear. And the entertainment was watching this bear rip this dog apart. Now, I would have never asked that question had I not seen that piece of pottery. So if anything, objects are a way to get at something greater than the thing itself. And I think that the reason why Wisconsin is Milwaukee and Madison is the hub of it is that we have great minds here who have been studying anthropology, who have been studying archaeology for many, many years, but yet have broadened out and created this not necessarily new field of study, but we're looking at it in a whole different way, in a different perspective. Because the first essays that I remember reading about material culture came out in the 70s, called As Material Culture. And I want to say 1975 was the first essay, the first essay that I read that called it material culture. And I could be wrong on that, but that's sort of like the year. There's also a big hub in Colonial Williamsburg where people are studying material culture and recreating that period in life. So we're just fortunate enough, thank the stars, that we have all these great minds here. And we have people who are willing to back it financially here in this state because they believe in it. And I think it really is a window into who we are and who we've been.